my name is Caroline Jones, and I've been the archivist here for 3.5 years. So it's my job to look after the college's written records, which go right back to before the college was founded and then go throughout its history. And I also love just getting the history and the heritage better known among the college community, especially among the students. I've been able recently to meet some small groups of students, show them the archives. And I love doing that, or doing talks or tours or exhibitions, just to show off our history a bit to everyone. Wellington's history is really interesting and unique, because we were founded as the nation's monument to the Duke of Wellington. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he was a military hero who won Battle of Waterloo, defeating Napoleon, and was thus seen as someone who had freed Europe from a tyrant who wanted to take over the whole of Europe. He later became a politician, and he was really seen as a national hero. Mm-hmm. So when he died in 1852, there was a great feeling that the nation should do something to honour him. He was also very popular with Queen Victoria and her husband, Prince Albert, the Prince Consort, so they were very much at the forefront of wanting to do this. And in discussion with the Prime Minister of the time, Lord Derby, after whom the Stanley is named, they came up with the idea of a school for the sons of army officers who had died while in service. Obviously, at that time, all education had to be paid for, so if the main breadwinner of a family died, they would be thinking, oh, maybe we can't afford the education that we would otherwise have done. And a similar institution already existed for the Navy, so this was thought to be a very good way of honouring the Duke by doing something for the military. So they had an appeal, a national appeal. I can show you in a minute the list of subscribers to that appeal. They raised over £100,000. They found the site and they started building the college, and Queen Victoria came and laid the foundation stone in 1856. Since then, the school has gradually expanded. It's become recognised as one of the leading public schools in the country and indeed internationally. It's always had its own character, which is quite interesting to trace through the archives. And obviously now the school is involved in many, many activities, so much going on. And another part of my job is to try to make sure that we're still taking into the archives records that document just what an amazing community it is now. Well, here we are in the archive storeroom, which is underneath the main dining hall block. And in fact, the room that we're in used to be the matron's linen cupboard. The cupboards at the end still have labels saying pillowcases and towels and shirts and things like that. But it was fitted up properly as an archive storeroom about 10 years ago. So we have the nice rolling shelving, and the archives were at that point collected into this one place. This is the VIP visitors book. So we start off with Queen Victoria when she visited in 1864 with two of her children. And then you get various other important people, Lord Derby, Patrick Talbot. That's the Queen of Hawaii, but that's probably going off on a tangent.
Yeah.
Charles Kingsley, after whom the Kingsleys are named, and his wife. And, you know, there are lots. They tended to sign at each speech day, and the great and the good used to come along on speech day. Royalty at various points. So that's King George and Queen Mary before they were...
Wow.
King George and Queen Mary, and so on and so forth. And my favourite page is...
It's interesting how they go from ink to biro.
In 1940, just after the college had been bombed,
the King and Queen paid a visit. So there they are. And that's our present Queen and her sister. So she would have been 14 when she signed Elizabeth there. And her sister would have been about 8.
Wow.
I think. Wow. So I think that's fun.
It's interesting how it's just like a line underneath their name. It's not like a... You know, you see the nursing signatures are very elaborate and detailed. It's just...
Yes, I think... probably if she did it now, it would be a bit bigger. But, you know, she was still learning it at that point. This is another early one, which I like. This is the Prefect's Minute Book.
Okay.
Because the prefects were responsible for a lot of the discipline within the school.
It's really quite worn down, that book. Lots of wear and tear.
So this is a record of the misdemeanours that were brought before the prefects and what they decided to do about them.
So did they have to record every single punishment they gave out, or just like a...
Initially, yes. I mean, it was a very small school when it began.
Yeah, yeah.
We were only about sort of fewer than 100 pupils, probably. Later on, the system got much more sort of organised. So you have this... We confess that we are guilty of having stolen eatables from the fruiterer and sincerely promise never to be guilty of such again. And they were given between 1,000 and 1,800 lines to write, presumably saying, I will not steal from the fruiterer again. And then this one of them said, I do declare on my honour that I never took anything from the fruiterer's basket. And it says his word was taken. They believed him when he promised that. And then you get this one. I beg to apologise to the prefects for having entered a public house and thereby having become intoxicated and having conducted myself to the discredit of the college. That's one. There's probably been a lot more of those.
Yeah. lots of lists of names there.
Yeah, so that's a list of prefects.
Okay.
Sometimes you get pages and pages where they've really had to sort of investigate what happened in some particular case. And prefects view with disapprobation the prevalent numbers of pistols and other small firearms in the school.
So they just found firearms just lying around in their
rooms? Well, boys, had them as personal possessions, I guess. There were probably, there weren't regulations around it in that time, I think. These are all bits of the Duke of Wellington's hair.
Okay.
I mean, having bits of people's hair was a thing in the Victorian era, both your family members and famous people.
And there are several different bits from different people.
Yeah, they are. Lots of people have given us these little locks of hair from time to time. There's one.
Do you have anything from the Stanley? Because that is the best house, so it must have.
I do, but it'll be on the other side.
They're probably the most bashed up of all of them.
I don't know, they're all fairly bashed up. Oh, yes, there was a fire.
Oh, there's a photo of that in-house, actually.
Yes, well, that's an account of how it happened. And these will be Stanley photo albums.
Are there any records of fights between Edgebarrow and Stanley pupils? Because I remember my old housemaster told me they used to have punch-ups in the HM's garden. I don't know if any of that's recorded, but...
It might be in the later ones, or it might be more recent than that.
Yeah.
Any teams that there was a Stanley boy in, they'll tend to put in a photo of the team and note which one was mm-hmm. the Stanley. But it all depends who was keeping the... who was keeping the album. But, yeah. The dormitories, which were the 8 ones in college, were always named after the generals whose statues are normally on the end of the buildings. But the houses were originally known as Mr. So-and-so's house, depending on who was the housemaster, and it changed every time. And it was only in about 1914 that they decided to give them permanent names to stop it being so confusing. So that's when they became known as the Stanley, the Talbot, the Benson, and the Wellesley, which then closed and then opened again.
So this book's from late 19th century,
yes.
Early 1900s?
Yeah.
What's this?
That was produced in 1909, when the school was 50 years old.
It's the Wellington Jubilee picture book.
Yeah. And it's quite... It has pictures of noted people of the time, but it sort of also shows you, for instance, what the different boarding houses did look like.
So
at the time,
that's the Wellesley. Where's that building now?
That has been knocked down now, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. About to get squashed.
These from the chapel, these cloths.
There is a whole story behind those, and I think I have now more or less established that they are from a mission church in South London, which the college sponsored from the late 19th century to about 1960. It was, you know, a thing that college did in those days, and it was quite an Anglo-Catholic kind of church, much more so than the actual school chapel would have been. Yeah. And so, yes, there are various copes and other vestments that came from there.
Yeah. Wow.
How did they end up here?
When the church closed, they brought a number of things here. Yeah, they brought a number of things here for safekeeping, and some of these actually ended up in the theatre costume department for a while, but then found, I'm not entirely sure how they ended up in the archives, but they have done eventually.
Wasn't there several outbreaks of diseases?
There have been, yes. Infectious disease was much more of a problem in the days before inoculations and antibiotics. And so, you know, measles, mumps, scarlet fever would go around regularly, flu would go around every winter. And there have been three or four really big outbreaks in the college's history that caused it to either leave the premises on one occasion, or start or finish a term earlier or later because there were just so many people ill.
Yeah, so. I read the one there that got sent around about 2 weeks ago of the College at War, and it said there's a polio outbreak.
Yeah, that's right. Just before the Second World War, there was an outbreak of polio. Not actually huge in numbers, but it was such a feared disease that the term broke up about a month early. These are some of the sanatorium daily record books. These would be kept by the matron of the sanatorium, and she's written down which boys are in there every day and what their conditions are. So that's quite interesting to look back through.
Is that jaundice?
Yes.
It's a bit more serious than the colds I go down to the medical school.
Yeah, boil on the arm. They kind of divide into infectious illnesses like flu, colds, scarlet fever, things like that. There's the usual round of breaks and sprains and injuries like that, which I suspect are probably rugby injuries much as they are now. If you look at this one for the latter part of 1918, you can see, you know, there's just a few things at the beginning of November. Boils, fever, sore throat, and then as you go through you start seeing influenza, and then ditto under influenza, and then more of them.
Wow.
And yes, you can see how it suddenly and then they have to do more than one page per day because there are so many students down there with influenza. So yeah, there's three. 21st of November covers 2.5 pages there with influenza cases. Yeah, they even stopped writing it in there. Just like, yeah. And they were mostly sent home, you can see. Okay, and in fact the nurse has written an account of it afterwards. This is difficult to describe. What we're looking at here is a silver massive helmet. It's shaped like a medieval war helmet, but it's all made of silver. And if we lift the lid off, We can see it's actually designed as a wine cooler. There was an old Wellingtonian who, in the period immediately before the Russian Revolution, was the British ambassador to Moscow. And he was very highly regarded. And while there, he was given this, which was a present from the city council of Moscow. And in fact, all the signatures engraved into the back of it are those of the city council. And he was also given a ceremonial scroll of the freedom of the city of Moscow, which is beautifully painted and illuminated. That's the way being conserved at the moment. But when he died, he gave us both of those and the Russian icon, which is now hanging in the chapel. That is a bit of a one-off. This is a volume in which they recorded the citations of all the old Wellingtonians who were awarded the Victoria Cross. So this was compiled in the 1930s and done retrospectively to list all of Wellingtonians the highest military honour had been given. And then after the Second World War, you can see the handwriting changes and the Second World War ones were included as well. And this letter which is inserted in it is from the lady who was asked to do this lovely handwriting in it when it was updated. And she writes, "It has been a great pleasure and interest to me to have done this book, and I only wish it was better done. But when one is 90, as I am, one's hand is not so steady as in former years." She's actually done a great job, hasn't she?
What kind of stuff did Wellington do in the war? Like, was there a plan if they got attacked? Or?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, some sort of action plan?
Yeah, I mean, they had their own branch of what became known as the Home Guard. And so they patrolled, kept watch at night and patrolled. And, yeah, if we had been invaded or, you know, attacked by German paratroopers, the responsibility would have been on them to fight them off. And there is an action plan for that. And also they had their own air raid patrol. So they would keep watch and, again, see if air raids came over, watch out for fires from incendiary bombs and so on.
I read the report and it said that only teachers were meant to fight. Would students have ended up having some sort of involvement? Or?
I read something which one of the students had written a lot later as an adult, and he said that it was very much the fashion. They were all sending off to the papers for knives, which they sharpened assiduously on the college stonework and kept sort of tucked into their sock or under their pillow, and they were all convinced that they would, you know, be stabbing the German paratroopers at close quarters, but whether they would have actually managed it, we're not sure.
Do you have the college photos like every year here, or just certain ones that you...
We have a lot. I would say whole school photos have been quite rare until quite recently. They've done house by house, as they still are as well. And I would say we have a good majority of house photos, but not all of them. Mm. And the same for sporting team photos. It varies, obviously, from period to period as to where, how many of them were taken and kept.
Yeah, yeah.